And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is explanations and deeper meaning. Each of my guests will explain the deeper meaning in baseball, business, or life. My first guest is a former baseball pitching hopeful for the New York Yankees who's turned to sports writing. We discussed his perspective on baseball's most scrutinized position, the relief pitcher, from his book, Bullpen Diaries. My second guest is an authority on business change management. We discussed the significance of having a mentor to guide us in our careers from her book, Skills for Success. My next guest gives deeper meaning to life's milestones. He's a former Oxford fellow who applies the teaching of history's greatest thinkers to our ordinary lives. We'll examine life's meaning from his book, Driving with Plato. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Robert Roland Smith spent the first part of his career as a prize fellow of All Souls College at Oxford, and the second part of his career as a partner in a leading firm of management consultants. He now divides his time between writing and consulting independently. Robert's consulting specializes on working with boards and senior teams on issues of strategy and change. Robert writes nonfiction that applies philosophy, psychoanalysis, and literature to the concerns of everyday life. He's written for any number of different publications in Great Britain. Robert's teaching has taken him across the United Kingdom, France, Norway, and even here to California. Robert is now on the faculty of the School of Life and is a visiting professor of modern thought at the London Graduate School. Having lived in Oxford, France, and Los Angeles, Robert has returned to his native London, where he lives with his wife and three daughters. Welcome to the show, Robert. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I love to have thought leaders such as you on the show. So let's dive right into it, shall we? What's so impressive I found about your writing is the breadth of knowledge that you possess on just a variety of different subjects. Classical philosophers, the Hungry Caterpillar, even the sitcom Curb Your Enthusiasm finds its way into your work. So why choose to examine life's milestones from the philosopher's perspective?
Well, I think this goes back really to what Socrates first said about life and philosophy. It's a famous quote, I'm sure you'll know it, Bill, and he said that the unexamined life is not worth living. So in other words, we can choose to live our lives and stumble through them without reflecting on what we do. But on the other hand, if we do take some time out to think about what we're up to and why we're doing it, we might actually derive more meaning and feeling from that. So I think that's the idea behind it.
Yeah, and a very good idea, and that ties into your first book, which was Breakfast with Socrates, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Yeah. So how'd you come up with the concept of examining life's milestones with Plato as a passenger in the passenger seat of a car in sort of a time travel vehicle? How'd you come up with that concept?
Yeah. Well, I think, sometimes we talk about what's the meaning of life, and it's a very big question to get your head around. So I thought, one way to answer this question about meaning of life and how to get more meaning from it would be to break it down rather than swallowing the whole thing at one bite. And so I had the idea of breaking it down into these milestones, and the book follows suit. So it starts with the main milestone for all of us, really, which is being born, and it goes through learning to walk and talk, starting school, passing your driving test, and so on, all the way through until that terrible moment with the Grim Reaper, and possibly beyond as well. But that was the idea, was to make life more thinkable, really, as a subject.
Well, it's a fascinating examination, and like you say, you cover every aspect, really, from birth to death. Most of my listeners, however, fall into that age category between 35 and 54 years old. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you to take a look at some of the major milestones sort of in that range and comment on them, if you will, please. So what could a French Marxist philosopher like Louis Althusser teach us about school and being educated?
Yeah, well, he had rather a severe line on all of this. And for him, being a Marxist, he looked at schools as functions of the state. So he basically said that we might think of school as a time when we can develop ourselves and fulfill our personal potential. But for him, effectively, schools are instruments of the state which are there to produce regular citizens, to make us behave in a certain way, to think certain things, and to conform to the state's ideals. So it's a pretty it's a pretty negative view about what school is about, but that was his view. So against him, I oppose other thinkers like Jean-Jacques Rousseau and more recent, more libertarian thinkers who will say that actually schools should be much more about allowing people to fulfill their potential and stopping the state getting in the way of that.
Well, you as a former fellow at Oxford, at All Souls School at Oxford, how do you feel about it? What's your personal take?
Yeah, well, I agree with that. I think the role of the professor is to supply students with the materials they need, but for them to make with those materials what they will, you know, so they can fashion ideas, thoughts, and concepts according to what makes sense for them, rather than having ideas imposed upon them. I mean, teaching is not indoctrination, right? It's support.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. But then the bigger question is, here, particularly here in America, and you're familiar with America, having lived in Los Angeles, what makes school such a drag? Or as Steely Dan points out in your book, you know, from the lyrics from My Old School, it is kind of a drag. So why do most of us view our education as sort of a drag period in our lives?
Yeah, that's right. There's a great line from that Steely Dan song. He says, I'm never going back to my old school. Well, I think it's... you know, you reach that stage later on in your life. You talked about the age of most of your listeners being in their kind of mid-30s to mid-40s. You get to that age and you realize, actually, education was one of the most valuable things that we had. And if only we'd studied harder or put more thought into it at the time, we'd be a lot happier. And I think one of the difficulties that we have with our kids these days is helping them to understand that school and grade school is an extraordinary opportunity to learn stuff, not just to slog your way through. And, you know, we oughtn't to wait until we're in our midlife to appreciate the benefits of a good education.
We're talking philosophy at the milestones of life with Robert Roland Smith, author of the book Driving with Plato. And Robert, let's turn to something else that is equally important and memorable in most people's lives, and that is the first kiss. What can William Shakespeare and Hegel teach us about our first kiss, if we examine
it? I mean, maybe the most famous kiss in the history of literature must be that between Romeo and Juliet, I would imagine, where it's just after they meet at a party, and they flirt with each other a lot. And there's a lot of things going on in that first kiss. And, I mean, Shakespeare wants us to get used to the idea that when you kiss somebody, you are sealing your fate with somebody else. And there are references in that passage in Romeo and Juliet where they talk about things turning to stone, and they're referring to being in a church. So there's something about having your first kiss which really seals you to somebody else. And even if it doesn't seal you to somebody else, it certainly seals you to the memory of it. I mean, after all, pretty much everybody can remember their first kiss. So there's something Shakespeare wants us to remember about your first kiss, which is this profound moment of memory and sealing, which really goes on there. And... if not Hegel, then if you take Sigmund Freud, for example, for him, the first adult kiss is the time we make that transition, really, from our infant life into proper adolescent sexuality and know what it is to be romantic.
All right. Well, then, Robert, it begs the bigger question. Why do we associate such fairy tale magic to that first kiss? Is it a result of Shakespeare's writing, and then over the centuries we've just sort of associated those feelings with it? Or is there something more to it than just that?
Well, it's certainly a part of it, those associations. But I think there's also, again, referring to Freud, there's something in the first kiss which echoes the kind of oral pleasure we had when we were very young infants being fed food and so on. And it's a wonderful, narcissistic, enclosed state where we're completely gratified. So if there is a magic in the first kiss, it's not only that it looks forward to adult life, but it looks back towards infantile life and that sense of complete satisfaction and oral satisfaction which we once had.
All right, we're talking to Robert Roland Smith. And Robert, let's continue on with Freud. Let's continue on past the first kiss to take it to the next inevitable stage. What can both Leonardo da Vinci and Freud, how can they shed light on losing our virginity?
Yeah, well, of course, the idea of virginity is essentially one of purity. And that's been reinforced by the whole Christian tradition. We talk about the Virgin Mary and so on. So virginity and purity go together extremely closely. And when Leonardo painted his famous Madonnas in the Renaissance, and other painters were doing the same, it was precisely that idea of purity that was praised. And so holding on to your virginity becomes something that's almost a matter of the sacred. I mean, it's associated with the very birth of Jesus Christ. You know, Christ if you believe in it, was brought into the world through a virgin birth, and that seals, if you like, the sanctity of what virginity is about. So virginity and purity go together very closely. Now, things have moved on a lot since then, and now we tend to think of virginity as a kind of rite of passage, something to be lost rather than gained. And certainly if you're a teenager with all of those hormones supercharging around your body, actually losing it will be one of the things you'll be most focused on.
Well, it's interesting, Robert, that you draw the analogy between virginity and being sacred and also the tie-in to religion. Why is it then that different cultures, even within Western Europe and the United States, view losing your virginity so differently? Here in the United States, we're far more prudish than they say are in continental Europe or even to a lesser extent Great Britain, where you're from.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a very interesting question. I mean, my experience of being in the States is that there are kind of two poles, really, two polarities going on. There is the strong, more promiscuous element, which is to do with freedom and experimentation and so on, and that's very much part of the American ideal of pursuing happiness. But there is equally, because it's a country which has a deep Christian tradition and deep religious tradition, there is this other movement which is towards purity and self self-preservation is probably overstating it, but certainly preserving something pure and good about oneself. So I agree with you. You've got two very different things going on in the same place.
An interesting perspective. We're talking to Robert Roland Smith, author of the book Driving with Plato, The Meaning of Life's Milestones. And I love the way that you interweave the modern with the classical literature and so forth. But I'm going to ask you to go back to maybe 30,000 feet, Robert, and look at the bigger picture. Why does literature matter, especially as we examine our lives? Why should readers read the great works of Western literature? What is there to be learned?
I think because if we don't go back to some of the great works of Western literature, we just end up either A, reinventing the wheel, or B, making lots of mistakes. I mean, we have, in all of those works, a huge treasure trove of information and ideas just waiting for us. And I think a lot of the time we are confronted with problems and we think, you know, how on earth am I going to deal with this? As though we're confronting that problem for the first time. Well, the truth is, most problems, most ideas have been addressed in one way or another pretty much successfully by people down the ages. And I think we need to use all of that material as a resource for us in the present day.
Well, Robert, you're on record as saying that actually reading novels makes us feel younger. How do you make that connection?
Oh, well, I'm thinking there of Proust, whose great work, In Search of Lost Time, talks about the idea of getting older and how we see things through new eyes. So he says the best cure for old age are not sort of anti-wrinkle creams or anything like that. It's seeing the same events from your past or seeing the new world now with a fresh perspective. And I think the idea of reading novels is that it can do exactly that. You know the feeling of what it's like when you're immersed in a novel. It's like you're in a whole new world. And then you take that world around with you as you go through your everyday. So the idea here is reading novels, reading literature actually refreshes the world around you, gives you a new framework for seeing it, gives you a new set of tools and terms with which to understand it. And that, I think, is why we should be reading this stuff.
We're talking to Robert Roland Smith. Robert, you have an interesting life. You've had two very distinct parts of your career, as I said at the outset. Right now, you're a consultant working with top executives. You're also a former Oxford Fellow. And here you are, you've written this great book, Driving with Plato. Why write? I mean, you've got all these other things going on in your life. Why write the book and why write it now?
Because I think the difference between being in the business world and being in the writing world is that the business world, everything is transient. You know, today's decision has been and gone, and you're on to the next thing. And that has its own merit. But in the writing world, things remain. So you write a book and it's there and it lasts. And I think that, for me, is the attraction to writing. It's having a thing out there that was written at a certain time and has a certain longevity to it. So I think for me, being in those two worlds allows me to both go with the flow of business life, but also to take stock, if you like, and put something down that will maybe last a little bit longer.
An interesting perspective, sort of your take on immortality, if you will, or at least a view of the world at the moment that you wrote the book.
That's right.
We're talking to Robert Roland Smith. Robert, what do you want readers to take away from reading Driving with Plato?
I think I want them to take away a mind that is buzzing with ideas. I want them to take away a whole plethora of thoughts and feelings and suggestions that they can then fashion according to their will. They can use it to derive meaning for themselves or just to enjoy a particular perspective or to pass it on to other people. So I'm not preaching to people to live like A or B, but I think I am saying to people, look, here is here's a whole set of stuff. Here's a box full of tricks and ideas that you can use to stimulate your mind and adapt to your own particular situation.
And Robert, one final question before I let you go. What did you get out of writing the book Driving with Plato?
Well, I love writing anyway, and I think even if I were on a desert island, I'd probably be writing. It's something I've done since I was a little boy. So there's that. There's the sheer pleasure of writing that I get from it. But I guess secondarily, it's just the pleasure from being able to communicate some of these ideas in a way that might reach more people than through writing kind of more academic, more technical stuff.
Very well said. We've been talking to Robert Roland Smith, author of the book Driving with Plato, The Meaning of Life's Milestones. It's a fantastic read. Robert, if people want to learn more about you, they're intrigued by the sound of your voice, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yes. Well, there is my website, which is robertrolandsmith.com. There's a W in the Roland, robertrolandsmith.com. And from there, there's all sorts of material and links and resources, and I think that's a good place to start.
All right, robertrolandsmith.com. It is a great place to start. Robert, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.